Can you give me some relief?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 83 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I'm Ron, as always, joined by the man who's asking for a Baby Yoda plush doll for every night of Hanukkah, Brian. Brian, how goes it this week?
I'm doing great. It's a great time of year. Thanksgiving has just passed. I will be asking about how your holiday was, but it's a great time of year. People are just overall in a better mood, a better spirit. You know, we're coming together as a planet. And I'm also looking forward to receiving my Baby Yoda plush toy. Now, have you actually watched any episodes of The Mandalorian on Disney Plus?
I have not as of yet.
So you do not understand the origin of Baby Yoda.
From what I understand, it's not the Yoda that appears in the later Star Wars, but it's one of his race, and it's apparently a baby. And I keep seeing all these memes now of the video of Baby Yoda flying with, I guess, the Mandalorian, and he keeps hitting buttons, and depending on the video, you see, like, one was him turning on, like, Bless the Rains down in Africa, another one was, like, Funky Town. I'll have to send those to you. Maybe
so. So it's not actually Yoda?
It's apparently not actually Yoda, just a member of his whatever race he is.
Can I ask you another question?
Of course.
On topic. Now, from a timeline perspective, when does this show take place?
That is an excellent question.
I know we have one listener right now who's screaming at whatever device she's listening to podcasts on. I know for a fact we have one person that's right now sitting there screaming.
I mean, I'm guessing it is, around the time of the first Star Wars, somewhere in that part of the timeline, maybe earlier. I think it might be earlier. To be honest, I've got no idea.
But you were just going to try and fake an answer?
Yeah, I figured it would sound good. Again, there's only one person out there listening that probably knows the true answer.
So if you are listening, send us a tweet, Facebook message.
Yeah, or go to ronandbrianpodcast.com.
Or just text me a link to the Google search that you did and pulled up that I can remember. I'm just wondering, like, is it like a part of the prequels? Is it part of the original three? Does it take place? You know, I don't think it takes place now.
It does not. No, I'm pretty sure it. Like I said, I'm pretty sure it takes place either around the time of A New Hope, or it takes place before then.
All right. Okay. Well, do you plan on watching it?
I will see. You know, I got a lot on my plate right now.
I'm surprised that you have not gotten Disney Plus yet.
You know, and it was even like it was a buck off the other day on Cyber Monday, right. And I almost pulled the trigger on that. But you know what I did pull the trigger on was a year of Hulu. For $1.99 a month.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I was like, hey, for $2. I mean, they've got what Handmaid's Tale, I think, is on there, and yes. that woman from Saturday Night Live, she's got that show Shrill, which is supposed to be pretty good. So, I'm sure I'll find some other stuff on there to watch. I mean, for $2 a month, you know, I waste that, you know, betting on sports at times.
No,
never. All right. Well, I'm excited about getting rolling this week, Brian. So why don't we just get into it?
Ron, there's a lot to talk about. There really is just a lot.
All right. Well, let's start with some drinking, as always.
Na zdrovie.
Salud.
Drink of the week.
Sláinte.
Pause.
Drink of the week.
All right, well, we do promise you one of these days we will have a drink of the week poll go up on the Facebook page. But in the meantime, Brian, what are you drinking for the podcast?
I have got a Victory Prima Pils.
Oh, good call,
my friend. Which is a German-style Pilsner. Based on the little research I did, I would describe this as a German exclamation of joy. I found its recognition an accomplishment. When I first sampled it, I would say that I there were heaps of whole flower European hops, and at the same time, a hint of German malts. I believe that Victory here has really achieved a bracing herbal bite and a smooth malt flavor. Not that I'm reading off anything, but here's to your health.
All right, cheers to you. I have I've got a special little entry here. This is from Treehouse Brewing Company out in Massachusetts. It's something called Green. It's a American IPA that they make with Australian and American hops. Special in that you can't get it outside of the brewery. A friend of the podcast was out that way over the Thanksgiving holiday, knew about my proclivity for beers, and picked this up and brought this in. That, I find, is a true friend of the podcast. Not someone that just goes to a brewery and doesn't bring anything back, but someone that specifically stops at a brewery to bring a beer for Ron and Brian.
Now, does this person, do they get a shout out? Are you going to, are they, do they get a 1 month free of the basic level of Patreon?
They do it for the love, Brian. That's all they, really? All it is. They do it for the love. And this is, I got to say, one of the better IPAs I've had. So if you are out in Charlton, Massachusetts, I recommend you stop by Treehouse Brewing and pick up any one of their. They've got quite a selection of beers out there, so check them out.
Now, is that in any way near New Bedford, Massachusetts?
I have no idea whatsoever.
Yeah, all right.
You're asking me a lot of questions so far that I don't have answers to, and I feel pretty bad about that.
I don't think you actually feel bad. I think what's going on here, Ron, is that I think you're suddenly realizing that I look to you as a stabilizing force in this whirlwind ride of life that that I am clinging to.
I'm your own personal Google. I get it.
So, like, you're the Mandalorian and I'm Baby Yoda.
I like that. I like that. Well, let's talk about something we do know about. And that's racism.
Okay. This week in
Racism.
Speaking of beer, thanks again to our friends at Obelon Brewing for sponsoring the Ron and Brian Podcast 2019 Racist of the Year Tournament. We had our first round matchups over this past week. Brian, voting was hot and heavy. Let's start on the left side of the bracket, see how things shook out. We'll start with our Paula Deen region. We had our number one seed, Amber Rocco, going up against Julie Edwards. That one wasn't much of a contest. Amber Rocco wins 78% to 22%. Going to the bottom half of that region, we had number two seed Gene Kramer going up against Mickey Tronson. Gene Kramer, crowd favorite, obviously showed it here, also pulling off the win, 78% to 22%, setting up a 1-versus-2 matchup in the next round, Amber Rocco versus Gene Kramer. Any surprises here for you, Brian?
No, this is, you know, this is, when looking at the Paula Deen region, this is the matchup that everybody was asking for. We want to see Amber going up against Gene. We want to see Rocco taking on Kramer. This is two heavyweights.
All right.
Of female entitlement.
Okay. Moving down, we've got the Trump University region. Number one seed, Corinne Tyrone. She was taking on a pair of competitors in Riley Grizzar and Lily Sexton, but she just powered through them. 89% to 11%. For a while there, it looked like it might be a shutout, but Corinne puts the pedal to the metal, makes her way into the second round. We had an all high school matchup in the bottom part of that region. Number two seed Kickapoo High School going up against the kids from Spain Park High School. The three seed, a little bit of an upset here. Spain Park knocks off Kickapoo High 67% to 33%. I think the Spain Park kids, I think they felt a little snubbed, you know, this being their second year in the year of racism. Felt they deserved a little bit better than a three seed, and they came out firing and they proved it. Thoughts on the Trump University region?
I'm going to say this. There's a lot of money that was lost in Vegas on this one. The Vegas odds makers, they were sitting there saying to us, put your money on Kickapoo. I'm not going to say that I bet it, but that was where I was. My loyalties were sitting there staring out at Kickapoo. Spain Park, I tip my cap to all of you racists out there. You really showed the world what you're bringing to the table.
All right. All the insanity of the past week happened on the right-hand side of the tournament. We'll start off with the Dolce and Gabbana region. History was made, Brian. We have never had a number four seed knock off a number one seed in Racist of the Year tournament history until this past week. Shockingly, number one seed Heather Patton goes down to the Texas Post Office Racist 60% to 40%. It actually wasn't even close for most of the week. Heather got a few votes towards the end, but she never led, never tasted victory. She was, I believe, your post or pre-tournament pick to win the whole damn thing. Shock, amazement. I mean, talk to me about this matchup.
There are no words to describe what I am feeling as a result of this. I've got such a long record of being able to predict the voting public in terms of quality racism. I think at one point I had gone 16 straight weeks picking the racist of the week. Heather Patton, I had her going into the championship round. Texas Post Office Racist, I cannot even understand taking down Heather Patton. However, I did speak to a couple of the voters. I polled them as they were leaving the voting hall, and what I was told was that the use of the word jigaboo was really something that launched it. Like, this was just this wasn't just a shouting lunatic, but this was someone with deep-seated racism. That he was able to increase his level of anger, and at the same time was using ethnic slurs that were appropriate to his level of anger. That was what the voters were saying. I'm still shocked.
Yeah, again, I think, we have this conversation often throughout the year, people who appear to be mentally ill versus those that just appear to be hateful. And I think maybe people felt Heather leaned a little bit more towards a little mental illness, which, to your point about the Texas Post Office racist, here is a man that was clearly versed in a lot of different racist terms, all of which he broke out in that short video.
It was ugly.
But again, I don't think you could have expected it. I mean, he only got one win, but again, he lost to Gene Kramer in the regular season, so not an embarrassing win by any stretch of the imagination, but he will move on to the second round. He's going to face the winner in the bottom half of the bracket. We had number two seed Nancy Goodman going up against Walmart Wendy. Nancy doing what a number two seed should, taking control, winning handily 80% to 20%. Any surprises in that matchup?
Who am I to even say at this point?
All right, well, we've got our Elite Eight of Hate lined up for the second round. I'm going to read off who we have going against each other. Brian, just give me your quick thoughts on each matchup. Paula Deen region, number one seed Amber Rye. Oh, wait, I forgot the Stephen Miller region. What the hell's going on here? You skipped Stephen Miller. I've tried to.
If there's one thing we know, you do not skip Stephen Miller.
But in the quite the scare for our other number one seed, Days in Dave had to go to overtime to knock off young upstart Ethan Kozak, 57% to 43%. Just a reminder, Ethan was the only competitor this past year that had no audio. His hate was so evident from just text messages and Snapchats that got him wins during the regular season, got him into the postseason, almost got him a win. I know you were shocked when you saw this went to overtime.
I was.
Unbelievable. I think maybe this was more on the fans' end, maybe a sympathetic vote. I think they feel Ethan will be around for a number of years, being ignorant and hateful. Whereas Days in Dave, it's probably getting towards the end of his career. He's kind of intimated that after this tournament, he may hang things up. Not be less racist, but just kind of keep it more to himself.
For Days in Dave, I mean, to me, I had him labeled as a 21% chance of victory. He has skyrocketed in, according to my calculations, with Heather Patton being kicked out. The effects of that upset with the Texas post office races, it's rippled to all the different regions. Now, I am not saying, and I may be saying for our listeners, that there has been some election interference on the part of the Russians. There were a lot of coincidentally, I saw a lot of Facebook ads that had been purchased by different organizations supporting the Texas post office races. It was just crazy, pointing out why he was such a terrible racist. We cannot rule out the fact that that was a legitimate vote, but we are going to file a protest with the tournament selection committee and have them conduct an investigation.
All right. Well, moving into the bottom half of the Stephen Miller region, no tampering needed there. Parker Mushton rolls over Chris Cooker 100% to 0%, rolling into the second round, going up against a potentially weakened Days in Dave. You know, I don't think we can ignore Parker Mushton. He had a lot of hate. And, you know, he was knocked off by the Texas post office racist, which, as we're finding, maybe was a stiffer competition than we were initially led to believe. So Parker Mushton rolling in there. So now let's take a look at all four of our second round matchups. Brian, and I want to get your take on each of them real quick. Paula Deen region, we've got number one seed Amber Rocco going up against two seed Gene Kramer.
This is going to be tough. This is the title fight right now. If you're looking at the four different divisions, to me, I think this is the one that's going to, this is the headliner. A lot of eyes are going to be on this one. Spotlight is over here. My gut is telling me Amber Rocco pulls this one out. Gene Kramer, very good chance of pulling an upset.
All right, going down to the Trump University region, we've got number one seed Corinne Tyrone going up against number three seed, the kids from Spain Park High School.
Ron, I think you've got Corinne Tyrone just an overly a strong racist, really brought it in her audio clip. Spain Park already one upset. Don't think they're strong enough to go to the semifinals.
Okay. Moving on, let's not forget Stephen Miller region again. Number one seed, Days in Dave, going up against number two, Parker Mushton.
This is going to be a shocker right now. I think we, having looked back on it, Days in Dave, maybe not as strong as the committee thought originally. Right now, I'm going to go with Parker Mushton.
So you're betting on the upset. I like the stones you got. And then going down to the Dolce and Gabbana region, Nancy Goodman, a strong number two seed in her own right. She's going up against that upstart number four seed, the Texas post office racist. I wouldn't want to have to be the one to pick a winner out of these two, but I'm going to make you do it.
Okay, thanks, Ron. I appreciate it. And I'm going to sit there. I'm going to pass the buck. I'm going to say that I've got to excuse myself from this round. I want to say Nancy Goodman will take out the Texas post office racist. However, after the shocking upset of Heather Patton, I don't believe I'm in any way, shape, or form in a position to state that the Texas post office racist is not as racist as somebody else.
Well, like Chris Berman says, it's why they play the games. So
I'm going to sit this one out.
So head on over to our Facebook page or our Twitter page. We will have the polls up shortly for the second round of the Racist of the Year tournament, or just go to ronandbrianpodcast.com for links to all of our social media.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
All right. Do you mind if I start this week, sir?
I defer.
Because I was pretty fired up earlier in the weekend because of this. So we headed up to Syracuse, New York, up to upstate New York, spent time with family for this past holiday weekend. Friday night, we take mom out to dinner in downtown Syracuse, get a flat tire. Not great. No. Yeah, kind of sucked, but, you know, what are you going to do? So next morning, you know, we obviously need to get the car back before the end of the weekend. Call up Mr. Tire in Syracuse, New York. Mr. Tire, you hear that name, you say, if anyone's going to have tires, it's going to be Mr. Tire. Right. So call them first thing when they open on Saturday. Tell them what kind of car I have. Say, I've got a tire. Don't think it can be patched. I'm going to need a new tire. Need the car back today. Can you get it done? They're like, not a problem. We're open till 7. Just drop it off. We'll get it taken care of. Around 9, 9:30, drop it off again. Here's my car, make and model. Going to need a new tire. Going to need this car back today. He's like, no problem. We'll call you in a couple hours, let you know what the deal is. I'm like, all right. So give him a few hours, 1 o'clock, call him up. Have you had a chance to look at my car yet? No. It's still out there. We'll give you a call in a couple hours. All right. Give him another couple hours, like 4 o'clock, call back. Have you looked at it yet? Yours is the next car we're going to look at. I'm like, all right. I'm like, because again, got to have the car back. They're like, we're open until 7. We'll definitely have your car done today. 4:30, they call me back. They're like, yeah, we looked at your car, and we don't carry a tire for it. But we can get you one on Monday morning. I'm like, I just said I need my car back because we're leaving on Sunday. I don't know, we can get you a tire on Monday. I'm like, you couldn't have told me that this morning. You couldn't have looked this morning. Well, if I had looked this morning, we still wouldn't have had the tire. I'm like, yeah, but I would have had like the entire day to find another place that did have the tire. Well, I don't know what to tell you. I can't get you a tire till Monday. So it's like, fine, you screwed us, whatever. So fuck you, Mr. Tire in Syracuse. But I will give a very rare kudos of the week to Mavis Discount Tire in Syracuse. Called them up. They actually had 2 of the tire my car needed in stock. Got us in and out in 90 minutes on Sunday morning so we could get on the road. But that's great. That just pissed me off. Like,
of course.
I understand if you fuck things up, but to not even apologize for it and just be like, it wouldn't have mattered if I knew, you know, if we found out earlier, we still didn't have the tire. Like,
well, he wanted to make sure you didn't bring your car anywhere else.
Exactly. Just in it for the money. So that's my terrible beef of the week. I think this might be one of my few legitimate beefs of the week in a while.
I would agree with that. It's not white privilege.
All right. What do you have?
Stores that are open on Thanksgiving.
Okay. Pro or against?
This past week, I was lucky enough, blessed, if you want to go so far, I was blessed to have my sister come down with her kids, my nieces and my nephew. And on Thanksgiving, I was able to convince them that it would be a terrible idea to go into Manhattan for the Macy's Day Parade.
Okay, good. Good call.
Didn't think it was a good idea. So instead, what I did was I said to my nieces, how about we go into the city? Let's just walk around.
All right. Sounds like a good plan.
There was an item that was for sale that my niece wanted to pick up. She went online and confirmed the store was open. So we went into the city. And I just thought, you know what? It gets them out of the house, gives them a nice little routine exercise. And we've spoken about this multiple times. To me, Thanksgiving is a high holy day.
You're big on Thanksgiving, more so than I am, but you're pretty darn big on Thanksgiving.
It is my favorite holiday of the year, and we'll talk about it later in terms of why I figured out this year that I will be disappointed every Thanksgiving moving forward. I realized it this year.
Okay.
So I just thought, you know what? I'm going to get the kids out of the house. This way, you know, they're not cooped up. And we took the subway in. Now, how crowded would you think the Apple store on 5th Avenue and 59th Street is going to be?
On Thanksgiving,
we'll call it 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Ooh, 1 o'clock in the... Yeah, that's a tough one because I would think most sane individuals would be, you know, at home preparing for a meal with the family. So I would say, you know, in a logical planet, maybe a handful of people.
Holy shit show, Ron. It was jam-packed. Literally so packed. It was a... social anxiety kicked in as soon as I walked in because I literally just saw nothing but like masses of people literally milling around. Like some people were buying stuff, but most of the people were just there to say they were in the Apple store.
And you were able to say the same as well.
Apparently so. But my hype. So we walked from 59th and 5th down to Times Square. Ooh. Did a little zigzag fashion and whatnot.
That's a hike.
It wasn't bad. We walked inside Trump Tower, which I have never been inside before. I did not realize that there was a retail portion of Trump Tower that you can walk in. So Secret Service is literally checking everybody that walks in.
Any did kind they of recognize package? You from the podcast?
No, which is why we will never do a video portion of this podcast. So we went to Starbucks that were in there. Then we walked out. And as we're walking through, every big chain retail market that exists in Manhattan was open. And it just made me so sad to see all these people working retail jobs on a day where they should be home with their families. Like, there is no reason why Sephora... Yes, I was in a Sephora on Thanksgiving Day. You'll be happy to know. By the way, that store fucking stinks. There are so... Like literally, every woman in there is dumping perfume on herself. So, like, there's just literally... It is this fog and mist of competing fragrances. It was hard to breathe. Anyway, but there's no reason why a Sephora employee is waking up early on Thanksgiving Day so that they can work a $15 an hour job. There's no reason for it. It is a terrible trend. Now, I remember years ago, the big outrage was that stores were opening up at midnight on Black Friday, and people who wanted to buy their cheap electronics were leaving their families at 8 o'clock at night on Thanksgiving so they could wait online outside Best Buy. Now, there is not even a hint of you should spend Thanksgiving with your family. Fuck it. Let's just open all day Thursday. I it's a terrible thing.
All right. Well, I mean, I can't say that I would argue with you.
Speaking of which, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was very nice. We spend Thanksgiving Day with my wife's extended family over in New Jersey. So good time, good seeing all of them, good food. Her cousin, excellent cook, makes probably the best macaroni and cheese you'll ever have. And also chocolate chip cookies. Stellar. Mm. Just absolutely stellar. Oh. And also that beer I recommended, Cape May Brewing, this really ties the room together. It was a white stout, which was amazing. I believe it was a collaboration with Left Hand Brewing. So gotta recommend that. And then, like I said, drove up to Syracuse for the weekend to spend the holidays with my family. Again, apart from the flat tire and the cold weather and then the snowstorm, we drove through on the way home that turned a 3.5 hour drive into a 6 hour drive. Apart from that, not too bad.
Excellent.
How was yours apart from your shopping extravaganza?
I really enjoyed spending time with my, it was exactly what Thanksgiving should be. My sister and the kids came down on Wednesday evening and left during the weekend. I got to spend a lot of quality time with them. I will say kudos to Whole Foods.
Yeah? Is that where you got your side dishes from?
I bought all of my sides from Whole Foods. They had a package which came with cranberry sauce, stuffing, mashed potatoes, green beans, and something else. What am I forgetting?
Yams?
Something else. I don't remember. Anyway, gravy.
Ooh, the
gravy.
I can't forget the gravy.
Now, I thought the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, Union Square, New York, Whole Foods is going to be a complete disaster. And I was completely wrong. They had an incredible setup. Yes, the store was very crowded, but you purchased your package online. I walked in with my printed receipt because I'm a good boy, and walked up to this kiosk that they had very much in a good viewpoint. As soon as you walked in, you knew exactly where to go. They looked at my receipt. They pulled up my order, walked me over to an area where they had all of the sides that were refrigerated, put together my bag for me, handed me my bag, and I walked out. In and out, probably less than 5 minutes.
Nice.
All right. Did you watch some football on Thanksgiving?
Quite a bit of football.
All right.
Quite a bit of football.
Let's talk about our NFL locks of the week from last week then.
What's there to talk about, Ron? I mean, I would like to, first off, congratulate you for, once again, for the 13th week in a row, you got both of your games correct. You started off, Cowboys were going up against the Bills. Now, the Cowboys on Thanksgiving, historically, a very strong betting entry. But if I remember correctly, what you said was, Bills are going to take this whole game. They don't even need the points. You are correct. Bills winning 26-15. And then this was one that I wouldn't even think that you were smart picking. You said the Patriots were not going to cover 3 points against the Texans. Texans winning the whole game 28-22. Very impressive.
Well, I mean, as impressive as I was, you were equally so. Again, nailing it with Green Bay. You knew Aaron Rodgers was going to show up on his birthday, especially against the Giants, who can't seem to do anything right, easily covering that 6.5-point spread. And as much as you love your hometown Jets, you knew that that role they were on couldn't last forever. You know, they were given 3.5. You knew they were going to lose, and you were right. So kudos to you on again, a perfect week, a perfect season. Can we keep this going for one more week into week 14? We will find out. Brian, who do you like in this coming week?
Well, I spent a lot of time watching Green Bay taking on the Giants on Sunday. Looking at the schedule, I see that the Packers are strolling into the comfy confines of Lambeau Field. Washington Redskins, literally one of the worst teams in the league. I've got the Packers laying 13 against Washington. To me, Aaron Rodgers once again rolls through. Then heading out west, Seahawks are going up against the LA Rams. I loved the Seahawks this past week. Now I've got them pick on the road. That's a smart bet in my book, so we're going to take them.
That is very brave, my friend. I like the Steelers. You know, they had a big win in the rematch against Cleveland this weekend. They are on the road in Arizona. They are giving 2.5. I am taking that line all day. Arizona has not been able to get much done this year. And in looking at some of these other games, I mean, there are some tough ones to pick. I mean, the Niners and the Saints, that's going to be a major matchup. Dolphins and Jets, to see which ones may stink the most. But I think just some ugly games here, Brian. And you already took that Green Bay one, which I was loving. I don't know. I'm liking Baltimore. I mean, they're on a hot streak again. They are on the road at Buffalo.
Very good.
They are favored by 5.5. I mean, I like the road teams this week, so I'm taking the Ravens -5.5. So put all your money on those games. What's that?
Who are the Ravens playing again?
Ravens are playing in Buffalo.
Oh, the Buffalo. They looked pretty good this week against the Cowboys. I'm surprised that you went for the Buffalo last week, but this week you're going against them.
I think they got up so much for that game. I think this is their letdown game. I think this is their trap game. I think Baltimore comes in. Baltimore is playing for that number one seed in the AFC. They've got it right now.
They are.
And I think if they want to have a chance to beat the Patriots again in the postseason, they need to have that game in Baltimore. Just my 2 cents.
Okay.
All right. Well, Brian, I think we need to move on to the political story that everyone was talking about today. I am, of course, referring to impeachment.
Indictment.
Impeachment.
Indictment.
What are you referring to? Indictment. Who was indicted today?
The political world was rocked in Pennsylvania, specifically West Philadelphia lawmaker, Movita Johnson Harrell. She has represented her district in West Philadelphia. She is a Democrat, I believe. She is a proud woman. Reached out to some of her constituents over this past weekend, letting them know that she was expecting to be charged with some crimes that had not been dealt out yet. However, today, prosecutors announcing that State Representative Movita Johnson Harrell has been charged stealing more than $500,000 from her own nonprofit, spending it on family vacations, designer clothing, furs, personal bills, and her bid for the legislature.
You know, Brian, I think that is such, I mean, I don't want to put down, you know, Philadelphia politics. I think it's such a small microcosm of the political world right now that I don't know that our listeners would really have any interest in that. In fact, I'm not even 100% sure why you would bring this woman's name up to begin with.
When Josh Shapiro, your state attorney general, says that Johnson Harrell engaged in brazen corruption, that is a direct quote, brazen corruption. She systematically tried to cover up her crimes by falsifying records and financial statements. Quote from Shapiro, her theft knew no bounds, as he charged the first-term lawmaker with theft, perjury, tampering with public records, and related crimes. Now, one of the things that I found interesting about this, and this is really why this story literally made me come to a complete shocking halt, is it was a word in this article from the Philadelphia Inquirer. If you go to their local section on their website, this article is there. It references that one of the areas where Representative Movita Johnson Harrell was spending her money was family vacations.
I don't know why you would find that interesting at all, but I think if you want to move on to an impeachment talk,
Ron,
I think now would be a good time.
Ron, if you follow the string, follow the thread, when people go on family vacations, where do they stay?
I mean, you can stay at youth hostels. You can stay at an Airbnb with a family. Some people rent RVs. I mean, there's really, again, I don't know where you're going with this. I don't know this individual. I don't know where you're going with
this. But people stay at hotels.
I mean, I'll agree. I can't argue that.
Sometimes people stay at Courtyard Marriott hotels.
I mean, you know, it's a popular chain. It's been around for 36 years now. I don't see why that would be interesting to our listeners at all.
Well, as I was doing some internet sleuthing this afternoon after my world had been rocked by these charges, I came across a photograph on Facebook. Now, we know Facebook is run by the Russian government, but that does not mean that everything on Facebook is fake, because I was doing research, and obviously the FBI agent who monitors my laptop, he was able to direct me towards a very interesting post on Facebook on the Courtyard Philadelphia City Avenue.
I don't know. I don't think there's anything of any relevance that you would find there.
Okay, well, I was able to dig a little deeper. And on October 23rd, there was a post that said, "We," meaning an inclusive group, "we are honored to have been recognized as a Southeast Regional Employer of the Year by Pennsylvania's Advocacy and Resources for Autism and Intellectual Disability at the PAR We Are Worth It Awards this past Monday in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania." And I thought to myself, wait a second. I remember somebody talking about a trip to Harrisburg recently with his hotel employees. And this is when you start to peel back the onion, because lo and behold, right there, and I'm going to put this on our social media page.
I don't think you right need to do there, anything of the sort.
Right there, when you click on the photos, you will see a photograph of Ron and Brian's own Ron with a photograph of our recently indicted West Philadelphia lawmaker, Malvita Johnson Harrell. Ron, this woman who stole $500,000 for fraud, theft, perjury, spending it on family vacations. My question to you, Ron, is how much did you benefit from this?
I don't know the woman. I'm not exactly sure what you are referring to. I don't know that I like your tone, to be perfectly honest. I think you're a despicable human being, even for bringing it up.
Ron, I've got a photo of you with a woman that's...
I'd love to talk about this.
Ron.
What?
Ron, how well do you know State Representative Movita Johnson Harrell?
Listen, there was no quid pro quo. That's all I know. I have a helicopter here that needs to take me away. There's no quid pro quo. I wanted nothing.
Ron, what did you get from her?
Nothing.
What did you have
there
to
get? Nothing. I want nothing. No quid pro quo. Jet fuel can't melt steam beams. This is the final word. For the better looking
what did you,
Ron and Brian podcast.
Ron?
Now you see, my helicopter is taking off without me. I hope that you are happy with the shenanigans that you have you brought upon us.
Oh, that would be a shame. Can I just say something for real for a moment?
Sure.
They took the fucking photo down. Somebody went on Facebook and took the photo down with her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Get out of here, because earlier this afternoon, while I was preparing for the podcast, I know, listeners, you don't believe that I do any... And this is a genuine moment right now. a lot of listeners don't think that I do any preparation. I do. So earlier this afternoon, I went on to the Facebook page, and I downloaded the photo of you with this lawmaker. Just now, I went to the Facebook page, and that photo has been removed.
I, you know what? One would question whether it was even there in the first place. So I guess, you know, you'll have your experts that can testify to that, and maybe I'll have mine.
We will be starting our impeachment hearings of Ron from the Ron and Brian podcast next week on our episode. Ron, be prepared. I hope that you will be providing a defense. The fact that this photo has been stripped from the Facebook page leads me to believe that you have something to hide.
I can neither confirm nor deny that. But let's talk real impeachment. Obviously, the continuing impeachment hearings have been going on this week in the House, and the House Democrats released their report on their findings so far, coming in at a tight 300 pages. I mean, honestly, you really just need to read like the first, I would say page 12 to 33, gives you kind of a wrap up, and then everything after that's just backup. Did you get a chance to thumb through this?
Not at all. I was too busy looking into indictments.
All right. Well, just in a nutshell, because I know not everybody is reading this. So this was compiled by three committees: the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, the Committee on Oversight and Reform, and the Committee on Foreign Affairs. There were 17 witnesses and over 100 hours of deposition testimony. On top of that, the Intelligence Committee called 12 witnesses in public hearings, which resulted in more than 30 hours of testimony, and that has resulted in them laying out their impeachment case against the president, basically broken down into two sections. First, the president's misconduct in relation to the frozen aid to Ukraine, and then the president's obstruction of the House of Representatives impeachment inquiry. So let's kind of do a quick rundown of both of these. You know, the first thing they speak about is on April 24th of this past year, how the president forced out U.S. Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch, again, a very steadfast anti-corruption ambassador, given no reason for her ouster other than the president didn't want her there. You know, then you see the president freezing military assistance to the Ukraine. There had been an approval for what was $391 million in military aid on July 3rd. The Office of the Management and Budget blocked the release of $141 million in State Department security assistance funds. Apparently on July 12th, President Trump placed a hold on all military funding for Ukraine. And then on July 18th, the Office of Management and Budget announced the hold to all of the relevant agencies and indicated that it was directed by the president. After this, two OMB career officials, including one of its legal counsels, resigned over concerns regarding the hold. And then on July 25th, President Trump had his now infamous call with President Zelensky of the Ukraine. And going a little bit deeper into it, I mean, I know some of the evidence that they pointed to in the president misconduct on the morning of July 25th, Ambassador Volker sent a text message to President Zelensky's top aide, which said, quote, heard from White House, assuming President Z convinces Trump he will investigate, quote, get to the bottom of what happened, end quote, in 2016, we will nail down date for visit to Washington. Good luck. Later on that day, Ambassador Sondland, who has also testified in front of these committees, told State Department aide David Holmes that Trump, quote, did not give a shit about Ukraine and that he only cared about big stuff that benefited him personally, like, quote, the Biden investigation that Mr. Giuliani was pitching. And then it goes a little bit deeper into how Ukraine kept trying to get an appointment to see President Trump either at the White House or amongst their travels to release this aid. The only way the White House would set that up, apparently, was if not only did the President Zelensky agree to investigate the Bidens and Joe Biden specifically, but that announcement had to be made in public. In fact, I don't remember earlier this year in August, the trip that President Trump was supposed to be making to Warsaw for the World War II commemoration that he canceled last minute and sent Vice President Pence instead. Apparently, that cancellation was due to the fact that President Zelensky would not agree to mention the investigations in public, so Trump canceled that trip to Warsaw, during which he was supposed to meet with Zelensky. So there are a number of times, even after that July 25th call, over the next couple of months, you see Rudy Giuliani, you see different ambassadors, you see different White House aides communicating to President Zelensky or his aides that there would be no meeting with President Trump and no release of the funds without a public declaration of an investigation against Joe Biden.
Interesting.
Yes. And then the second part of it is basically obstruction of justice, you know, in relation to all the subpoenas that the House put out. Obviously, the president refused to comply. He has refused to produce any and all subpoenaed documents. He has refused to allow top aides to testify. I believe there were 12 White House officials that were asked to testify. 10 were served subpoenas to testify. None of them did under the direction of President Trump. He also tried to block the witnesses that did testify. He tried to block Ambassador Sondland from appearing. He tried to block former Ambassador Yovanovitch. And then they also refer to the president's intimidation of witnesses as far as comments the president has made in public, comments the president has made on Twitter. So it is, you know, it's a pretty thorough document. It lays out a fairly compelling case. You know, the question then becomes, is it compelling enough to get enough members of the House to vote on articles of impeachment and move this to a trial in the Senate.
Here's my question to you, is what in the report, and obviously I don't believe you've read all 300 pages, but I know you have, I know that you read the important sections of it, and I know you've been following it closely. My question is, what in there can they prove Trump did? Like, one of the things that I've picked up on is that everything points to a quid pro quo. Everything points to Trump using the White House as a tool for his re-election campaign. Everything that warrants impeachment, everything that warrants him not being president. Now, my question is, what do they have that shows he is responsible for this, rather than a potential, incredibly coincidental long list of related events?
I mean, honestly, as far as the Ukraine situation, I don't know that they have a smoking gun just yet. And again, you know, we see this in the way that Trump operates in general. He operated this way in his business. He operated this way with the Russian involvement in the 2016 presidential election. You know, he distances himself enough from it, so I don't know that as far as misconduct, they can directly say, you know, Trump directed this. You know, he asked for this.
How do you impeach based on that?
But I think I think a better argument can be made, and this is what really, you know, got President Clinton impeached. I think they have a stronger case with the obstruction of justice charge, because they can argue that the reason that they're not able to connect all the dots as far as it relates to the quid pro quo with the Ukraine is because of President Trump's efforts to hinder their investigation by blocking subpoenas, by not allowing people to testify, by not turning over documents, by, you know, trying to intimidate witnesses. So I think it will be, I think there's enough here to get articles of impeachment passed. I think it then depends on when the trial moves to the Senate, you know, how many of these people that have been subpoenaed that didn't testify, if they testify, and if they do testify, what do they say? I think documents that have not been turned over yet, if they are able to get them, you know, I think it was huge that the phone records came out recently for both Rudy Giuliani and Devin Nunes, you know, tying Rudy Giuliani to a number of calls to the White House, to the Ukraine, to Lev Parnas during this whole situation. Now we found that Devin Nunes, who sat on this committee for the Republicans, has had phone conversations, or, you know, someone with his phone had an 8-minute phone call with Lev Parnas. And right. Lev Parnas's attorney has indicated that they have, you know, video and audio and documents that could potentially be very incriminating for Rudy Giuliani. So I think if this does move forward to the Senate, I think it ends up on whether you get a Rudy Giuliani to flip because it's in their best interest, or you get a Devin Nunes to talk about what he knows, or a Rick Perry. I mean, we saw it with Gordon Sondland, you know, the former ambassador to the Ukraine. You know, he ended up testifying 3 times before he said to himself, you know what, I don't want to go down for this. And he ends up telling the truth, and he gave a lot of pretty damning testimony the 3rd time he was called in front of the committee. I think, you know, as more of this information starts to come out and more of these players are tied in, I mean, you look at a nut job like Giuliani, is he going to go to prison to protect Donald Trump? I don't think he does. I don't think a Rick Perry, if it comes to it, goes to prison.
Now, here's my next question. Trump has said on multiple occasions what a fan he is of the using the pardon.
Well,
so do you not believe that he's going to sit there and say to Rudy, keep your mouth shut, take the hit, and I will pardon you?
But I guess the question then becomes, you know, are they confident enough that, you know, let's say Rudy Giuliani gets charged with something, So now we're just about to go into 2020. So let's say I'm a Rudy Giuliani and I'm facing a court case that's going to last, you know, potentially 9 months, 12 months, 15 months. Am I going to then gamble on the fact, in the hopes that Donald Trump is president come 2021, if I'm potentially going to prison by then? I think the fact that we're going into an election year really, you know, makes people think, because, you know, whether impeachment succeed, if impeachment doesn't succeed, he could very possibly lose the election. And if you're banking on a pardon to come from an individual that may not be president when that time comes, you know, how comfortable are you going to feel about that?
Hold on. But don't you think that he's going to pardon Rudy Giuliani after Election Day, in the sense of this? If he wins the election, he is no longer accountable, in the sense that he doesn't have to get reelected again. If he loses, and he knows that he has now 6 weeks before he, no, it's more like 8 weeks. He's got 2 months. He's got 14 days. Like, okay, I thought you were going to stop me. But don't you think that if Trump loses the election, he's no longer accountable? He's not trying to run for re-election anymore. Now he'll just pardon everyone.
But, and again, that's very possible. But if prosecutors are smart, and I think a lot of them are already thinking this way, they would not time it so that these convictions would come, you know, prior to Election Day. Because then it really makes someone think. Then it makes a Rudy Giuliani think, you know, do I want to roll the dice and hope this guy gets reelected and then hope that he would keep his word to me that he would pardon me?
But do you see this thing getting dragged out past Election Day?
It possibly could. You know, people have said that, you know, even though this is the initial impeachment inquiry, you know, there is other conduct that the House could look into and really drag this out for a long period of time, you know, so that it carries throughout the election process. And then if Trump does happen to get reelected, then move forward with potential impeachment proceedings after Election Day. And, you know, so some people have said, you know, do you roll the dice? You roll the dice and hope that the Democrats have both the House and the Senate by that point.
It's possible. I mean, oh, wow, I see what you're saying now. Interesting. No, this is you've given me some hope.
So, again, I think it gets out of the House. You know, whatever happens in the Senate, I think all depends on who's willing to testify and what information is given up at that point. But what we've found so far certainly seems fairly damning. And the Republicans have yet to really put up what would be considered any type of defense so far.
Mm-hmm.
And the scary thing is like, when you look at Joe Biden, is this a man that you necessarily needed to open an investigation on to ruin his presidential campaign? Or do you just let Joe be Joe?
Are you talking about him nibbling his wife's finger?
I mean, it was, you have to admit, a little bit weird during that campaign stop this past week when his wife was speaking and she extended her arm and he literally started to, like, gnaw on her finger.
I thought it was a very cute, affectionate way of a husband to show that after 50 years of marriage, he still loves his wife.
And what about the No Malarkey Express? Because to me, there's no better way to connect with the youth voters that are going to be 18 by the time Election Day rolls around, like using a word like malarkey.
Ron, you're going to have to do me a little bit of a favor here. What is the No Malarkey Express?
You have not seen his Joe Biden's campaign bus?
No, I have not.
Well, it says, you know, Biden 2020, and it has this writing along the side that says No Malarkey.
It's almost as if he doesn't want to win.
Again, this really points to how stupid this whole thing is. If this is what takes Trump down, it's amazingly dumb by the fact that all you really need to do, if evidence of Joe Biden's previous failed presidential runs have proven, if you want anyone to torpedo a Biden campaign, just let Joe Biden do it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
And you don't even need to investigate Hunter Biden's business dealings. Just look at what he does in New York City strip clubs.
And Washington, D.C. strip clubs. Yeah. Apparently, Hunter Biden was a freak.
I mean, can you, I mean, and Bo Biden, you know, rest his soul, appeared to be a fairly amazing individual. Served his country, family man. I mean, I don't know that I've seen a public official set of brothers that have been so further apart in behavior than Hunter and Bo Biden.
Yeah, no.
Hunter's smoking crack in strip clubs. He's sending strip club employees out to buy sex toys to use on them. Allegedly.
He's also impregnating strippers.
That too, and then marrying them.
He married them.
Because he's married. I think one of the women. I think the woman he married after he stopped dating his dead brother's widow. Which I mean, I just can't even wrap my brain around that. But I think the woman, after he dumped her and married this woman like 3 weeks later, I believe she was a stripper at a strip club that he would go to.
Ron, I'm hearing a lot of malarkey.
It's all malarkey. Don't talk about no malarkey, because it's all malarkey.
A lot of malarkey with Hunter Biden. And this is what's disappointing me.
So we will keep an eye on the Bidens. We'll keep an eye on the impeachment hearings. We're almost ready to wrap up here. I guess the last thing to talk about... The Irishman?
Did you watch it?
I did watch it. I had to break it up.
Did you watch did you watch all 14 hours of it?
I'm not going to lie. I had to break it up into two nights. I watched I watched 2 hours or so and then finished it the next night.
I was able to knock it out in one sitting.
That is impressive. It's what, 3 hours and 29 minutes?
Something, I was going to say 3.5. What was your take on it?
I think it was a decent movie. I think it was very formulaic. I mean, they really literally got, I think, just about every person from every really good mafia movie ever made, with the exception of Ray Liotta, which I think, you know what I think the problem with Ray Liotta was, is he's had so much plastic surgery, his skin's so tight that none of the makeup sticks to it anymore. So they weren't going to be able to age him with makeup. But everybody else was in there. I mean, you've got Pacino, you've got De Niro, Joe Pesci, Chaz Palminteri. Who else was in there? And you see people that you don't know their names, but you're like, oh yeah, that guy's been in, you know, mafia movies before.
They got the babysitter from Goodfellas.
Yeah.
The blonde girl who has to go back and get her lucky hat.
Yeah.
She makes a cameo in this movie.
So just crazy. So again, I mean, it's interesting to see how diametrically opposed some people are. Some people think it's the greatest piece of filmmaking in years, and other people just hate it with a passion.
Don't you think that's more of a symptom of the society we live in now?
Oh,
You're not allowed to just sit there and say, oh, it was all right. You have to either... be 100% or 0%.
Listen, it was enjoyable. I don't know that I would sit and watch it again, but I thought it was a good movie. I thought there were some good performances. I was extremely disturbed towards the end when they really aged Joe Pesci so much when he was in prison there. Sure if they meant to make him look like the old bald guy from those Six Flags commercials, but I was very much expecting him to just like pop up out of his wheelchair and just be like, I don't know. It was a lot. But I think the most impressive part of the acting was how low key Joe Pesci was able to be for most of the movie.
Absolutely. I think the shame of what's going on here with The Irishman is that because of the cast, because of the director, it's being compared to Goodfellas. It's being compared to Casino. And in no way is this The Irishman in any way in that league. This was, it felt like somebody had taken Casino and made a made-for-TV movie out of it.
Yeah. I mean, again, it was an interesting story. But again, you know, you have to, because it was just told by the point of one individual, you know, you have to also question how much of that is real, you know. But again.
Certain people believe there's not much of it that's real.
Yeah. So, but I still think it was decent. I would say watch it. You know, you'll probably enjoy it. If you don't, what else are you gonna do? And there was also a lot of stuff like that just didn't make sense. Like they do a lot of that. Hey, you know what I'm talking about. And it's like, no, I don't actually know what you're talking about. Like towards the end, Joe Pesci was like, Frank, I'm going to go to church. You know what I'm talking about. And then he went to the church and he went to the hospital and then he died. But it's like, what do you mean you're going to the church? Like, is there something we should have read deeper into that? I wasn't sure.
That went right over my head. I didn't even pick up on that.
I was a little disappointed that Joe Pesci didn't break into song.
When I'm away from you,
those dulcet tones. What to say. I'm telling you, everything's coming up Pesci right now.
Have you listened to this album yet?
I haven't. I really need to. I hear there's some killer cuts on there.
This is the only song I've listened to off this album.
That's awesome. I love it. All right. Well, I think that's all we got for session this week. We're going to be moving on and starting the Patreon edition after this. As always, you can go to ronandbrianpodcast.com. In the upper right corner is the link to our Patreon. We'd love to have additional subscribers. You can get some free swag along with the free content. You know, we did release the episode that we recorded live at the Philadelphia Podcast Festival back in July. That actually was available to Patreon subscribers right after we did it. So again, that's just giving an example of the amazing content that you can have available to you if you become a subscriber. Brian, anything else for this week?
Absolutely not. I'm really, you know, we've got a bunch of stories that we were not able to get to during this week's podcast. Prince Andrew had a terrible week. We're going to be discussing him. We're going to be talking about stores in Japan requesting that their female employees wear red badges when they have their period.
Makes sense.
And there are there's a whole slew of shit there. We're going to be talking about Deutsche Bank. We're going to be talking more strippers. I'm going to find out from you how fast you can drive from the East Coast to the West Coast. And ultimately, we're going to be talking about Willie Nelson quitting the marijuana drug, which we all know is a gateway drug, according to Joe No Malarkey Biden. And that's not even the wacky stuff that we also put aside. I mean, we're also going to be talking about perineum sunning.
Ooh. James Brolin, I hear, sunburned his asshole.
Save it for the Patreon, because that is where we're going to be talking about it. So if you are interested in some of the things that we were just talking about, like the model who needed a 60-inch butt amputated after illegal injections, go to patreon.com/Ron and Brian Podcast. We're putting up a minimum of 30 minutes a week of extra material every week. Things have a tendency to get a little wacky.
All right, and don't forget to go to our Facebook page and our Twitter page to vote on our second round matchups in the Racist of the Year tournament sponsored by Obalon. We'll have four matchups. You guys are going to decide who moves on. Will we see another upset like we did in the Heather Patton matchup against the Texas Post Office Racist? It's up to you guys to decide. So, but again, as always, for all things Ron and Brian, go to ronandbrianpodcast.com. You get the links to the social media, you get the links to the podcast, and you get the link to our Patreon. Brian, what do you want to say to take us out?
I love you.
Love you more, my friend. All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining, and we will catch you next week.